Here on Chaf Ches Amud Aleph, we're up to the Gemara with the famous sugya of mitzvos lav lehenus nitnu, and that's what I want to talk about this evening. I'm not even sure that we'll get to the Gemara itself. This is such a world famous, such a classical sugya that so many of us have heard of, mitzvos lav lehenus nitnu, and it's something that, before we get into the Gemara itself, I just want to give background as to what exactly the story is with this sugya of mitzvos lav lehenus nitnu. So, we have a basic premise that our Gemara discusses, which is the premise of mitzvos lav lehenus nitnu, which basically means that a mitzvah is made to be performed because it's a mitzvah. And a person, generally we assume, does not get hana, does not get benefit from the fact that they are performing a mitzvah. You are doing the mitzvah because God told you to do it. Rashi writes in our Gemara, as we'll see, Daf Chav Ches Amud Aleph, Rashi comments, what does it mean, mitzvos lav lehenus nitnu? He says, on the contrary, the mitzvahs were given to be a yoke on our, an obligation. It's a duty that we have to keep to the Torah and mitzvahs, and this is not an enjoyable activity, Rashi says. This is something that we are obliged to keep to. This is something we have an obligation to do. Rashi writes in Chulin Daf Pei Tes the same comment that it is a gzeiras melachi. This is a edict of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, and this is basically what we are all obligated to do, and that's why we assume mitzvahs lav lehenus nitnu. There are some achronim that comment that Rashi doesn't have to go into such a interpretation over here to say that when I do a mitzvah, I'm not having any simcha, I'm not enjoying it at all, everything is just for the sake of God, it's olal tzavareyem, it's just a duty, an obligation that I have, and nothing more than that. Some achronim write that no, the reason why we assume that mitzvahs lav lehenus nitnu is not that you don't enjoy the performance of a mitzvah. Many of us enjoy when we sit in the sukkah, when we shake the lulav, it's a very enjoyable time of year, and we do get enjoyment from the various mitzvahs that we do. And therefore, there are some achronim who suggest that maybe what it means, mitzvahs lav lehenus nitnu, is that when we talk about the context of isurei hana, when we talk about a person not being allowed to derive benefit from any given item in the world, we don't assume that every kind of benefit is called a violation of getting hana. And therefore, we would assume that when you're performing a mitzvah, that is not called getting hana in the classical sense. Getting hana means I'm enjoying myself in the physical sense, not in the spiritual high that I'm getting from the mitzvah. And therefore, that's not categorized, that's not classified as a hana that would violate the law of isurei hana. That's the general understanding that some achronim suggest. Again, it's a little bit different from what Rashi says. But both, whatever you understand, both of them are basically pointing toward the same idea that when a person performs a mitzvah, we assume you're doing the mitzvah because you're supposed to be doing the mitzvah. And even though sometimes you derive some benefit, some pleasure from it, for whatever reason, we don't consider that benefit and that pleasure to be anything substantial. We don't consider that to be the real activity that you are now involved in. What's interesting is that although this is a famous concept all heard of, mitzvahs lav lehenus nitnu, it is actually a machlokas in our Gemara whether or not that principle is really true. Our Gemara has a discussion about whether or not we have such a concept, and the Gemara comes to the conclusion after developing the thesis a little bit that maybe we should say mitzvahs lav lehenus nitnu, the Gemara comes to the conclusion that yes, we assume mitzvahs lav lehenus nitnu. And that Gemara basically begins with a discussion about what kind of shofar you're allowed to use. Again, I don't know if we'll get to it tonight, we might have to get to it next week, but I'm just giving the background for understanding all of this Gemara that we're going to learn. So basically, the Gemara wants to know what kind of shofar is a person able to use. So what if I have an animal that was set aside, that was designated for an ola, or for a shlamim, for some side of carbon? Can I use the horn that is on that animal as the horn that will be blown on Rosh Hashanah for the mitzvah of shofar? Or do I assume, no, you're not allowed to get hana from a carbon, you're not allowed to use it for your own purposes. You have a mitzvah to go and buy your own shofar, to use it in your own shul, and figure out how you're going to get that shofar. You're not allowed to go and double up and use something that was already designated as a carbon. That's the Gemara's discussion. And finally, the Gemara comes to the conclusion that you're allowed to use both a shofar shel ola and a shofar shel shlamim. If a person went ahead and used those for the mitzvah, you went ahead to your carbon, you chopped off the horn, and you used that on Rosh Hashanah for your mitzvah, you would be in fulfillment of the regular mitzvah because mitzvahs lav lehenus nitnu. That is the conclusion that our Gemara comes to. But what's interesting is that it is not a given. It's not so simple. The Gemara has to work to get to that point. That is not the premise that the Gemara starts with in our sugya. So,
is that a mum on the carbon?
Is that a mum on the carbon if you cut?
If you cut the horn.
So again, there's a discussion. Rashi talks about when exactly did you cut it off. Did you cut it off before you shechted it? Did you cut it off after you shechted it? It will make a difference with regard to the shakla v'tari of the Gemara. But basically, in general, the Gemara is talking about the Gemara is talking about whether you'd be able to use such a horn, or do we assume that no, that you wouldn't be able to do that. Now, there's a general question that you have to think about whenever you discuss mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu, and that is, when we assume that, let's say, you're allowed to use the shofar of an ola, or the shofar of a shlamim, and if you went ahead and you used that, you have fulfilled your obligation of shofar on Rosh Hashanah, because mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu, and even though to get a bit of pleasure from a karban, still over here this is not called benefit and pleasure, because you're only doing a mitzvah with this item, with this karban. However, you have to ask yourself, is this even lechatchila? Is a person even allowed to rely on that principle of mitzvahs lav lehenes nidnu lechatchila? So take, for example, a case that our Gemara talks about here. So you have a shofar of an ola or a shofar of a shlamin. Am I allowed lechatchila to go ahead, cut off that horn, and use it in the base hakneses to fulfill my obligation of tkiyah shofar? Or does the Gemara just mean to say that b'di'evid, if a person went ahead and used the shofar like that, we would assume that you have fulfilled your obligation because mitzvahs lav lehenes nidnu. You have not violated the din of me'ila, you have not violated the din of getting hanav from something you weren't allowed to, because mitzvahs lav lehenes nidnu, but lechatchila, you're not allowed to do such a thing. So this is a very fundamental question that one needs to think about whenever we talk about this idea of mitzvahs lav lehenes nidnu. Does that allow a person even lechatchila to go ahead and use such an item or not? So take, for example, the Gemara in Maseches Sukkah, Daf Lamed Aleph, which is also a Gemara in the further lines of our sugya. So the Gemara talks about the following. What if I have a lulav? On Sukkot, everybody has an obligation to shake a lulav. So if I have a lulav shel avodah zarah, what's the halacha? Can I use that kind of lulav? I have a tree that people use to serve avodah zarah. Am I allowed to take a lulav from that tree and now use it for my mitzvah? Well, you'll say, even though it's Isuri Hana, it is Avodah Zarah, in the end of the day, I would assume that mitzvahs lav lehenes nidnu. So the Gemara says, if you go ahead and you use it, you have fulfilled your obligation. Ah, you violated the principle of Isuri Hana, Avodah Zarah is Aser B'Hana, you're not allowed to use it for your own purposes. Says the Gemara, simply, mitzvahs lav lehenes nidnu. However, the Gemara, what? So the Gemara first starts off and says, Lulav shel avodah zarah lo yitol, you shouldn't take it lechatchila, but b'di'evit, if you used it, we would assume that you have fulfilled your obligation. What about Isuri Hana? So the Gemara says, no, mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu. What about mitzvah b'aveira? So that's also a question. What's the story with mitzvah b'aveira? Let's leave that factor out for now, but the question is just in understanding the Gemara. The Gemara says, lechatchila, you're not allowed to use such a lulav. B'di'evit, if you use it, you have fulfilled your obligation. Why? Because mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu. So, Rashi... So what do you see? You see that lechatchila, you're not allowed to. Isn't that a clear indication that whenever you have this principle of mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu, that just tells you that b'di'evit, if you use such an item, you have fulfilled your obligation. But lechatchila, you're not allowed to rely on that kind of factor. You're not allowed to use that lechatchila, such an item, such a lula from an avodah zarah tree. You're not allowed to do that. Isn't that an indication? So Rashi goes out of his way over there and he explains, no. Rashi there says, what's the pshat in the Gemara? Why does the Gemara say that you're not allowed to take it lechatchila? What should have Rashi said? What should Rashi have said? That the reason lechatchila you're not allowed to use it is because lechatchila you can't rely on mitzvahs lav lehenes nidnu. Use something else. Rashi says, no, the reason why you're not allowed to use it lechatchila is because it's ma'us lagavoa. It's because this is repulsive. How are you using something that's avodah zarah, that's been used for avodah zarah, for your fulfillment of your mitzvah? Rashi chooses not to say that the reason you cannot use it is because mitzvahs lav lehenes nidnu cannot be relied on lechatchila. And you see a clear indication, this is what the Achronim point out, and this is what all the Rishonim write in our sugya as well, that mitzvahs lav lehenes nidnu can even be relied on, even lechatchila. It's not just a din b'di'evet that if you use such a lulav that was from avodah zarah, then you have fulfilled your obligation because mitzvahs lav lehenes nidnu. It means that even lechatchila you would be allowed to go ahead and use such a lulav. The only reason you can't, says Rashi, is because a separate factor, a separate reason of ma'us lagavoa. So that's what we're getting to. I just want to lead up so that we understand the kasha. So the problem is that how do you understand the beginning words of our Gemara? Our Gemara starts off and says that you're not allowed the chatchila to use a shofar shel ola and a shofar shel shlamim. B'di'evit, if you use it, mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu. What do you mean? You can't say over there, Mos Lagavoa. You can't say God is repulsed by you using the horn of a carbon, of a kachim. What do you mean? What's so repulsive about that? It's more kaddish, it's more holy, it's more sanctified. I should have said that everybody should go ahead and use that. Why don't we also use the principle of mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu there lechatchila? So the Ritva points out that question on our Gemara. The Ritva says, no, the reason why is because there you also have a separate factor. Over there, it's a problem of, it looks like that you're being nenam in akachim. It looks like you're stealing from kachim and using it for your own entity, your own private purposes, and therefore the Ritva says this is also an exception to the rule. So far you have an exception to the rule by lulav shel avodah zarah, that lechatchila you're not allowed to use it, not because of mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu, but rather because mos lagavoa. Then you come to our Gemara, which is another exception to the rule, that the reason you're not allowed to use the shofar shel ola and the shofar shel shlamim is not because of mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu, but rather because it looks like you're stealing from kachim itself. Yeah.
So even if you say mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu, you still have the issue of its mos. So why would you be allowed to be debit? You still have the mos.
So all mos means is, it's not the proper thing to do, but is that enough of a factor to say that even b'di'evit, it's as if you've done nothing? So that, the Gemara says, we won't go that far. Again, it's not the proper thing to do l'chatchila, because why are you using such an item? You should have found something better. But once you did it already, so then we assume that would be good enough. That's what the assumption of the Gemara is, but basically what emerges from that discussion in the Rishonim would be that mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu is something that would apply even lechatchila, if not for the factors of by kachim that you have, it looks like you're stealing from kachim, and by avodah zarah that it's mos lagavoa. But in any other case, we would assume that you can rely on it even lechatchila. So what's the halacha? What would be the halacha when you have the act of a mitzvah? So far it's easy. So far we've spoken about shaking a lulav. That's something, maybe you get some spiritual pleasure, you're on a big spiritual high when you shake the lulav, you're all excited to say shachianu. But what about when you're performing a mitzvah that you also get physical pleasure from? So what would be the halacha in a case like that? Do we still assume that mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu even in a case like that? Or do you say, no, you can't take it that far. Mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu just means we don't consider the spiritual pleasure that you get from shaking a lulav to be a real pleasure. But when a person is really getting physical pleasure from that act that they're doing, even though it happens to be a mitzvah, maybe we should say that is a violation of Isuri Hana. What do I mean? So you take, for example, another case that our Gemara discusses. I'm basically speaking out all the cases of our Gemara, then it'll be very easy to run through what the Gemara actually says. So we have in our Gemara a different case. The Gemara says, let's say a person takes upon himself some kind of strange nether. So you have the whole Gemara in Adarim talks about all kinds of different stipulations that a person makes. Hare alai, that I'm not going to eat potato chips, I'm not going to eat this, I'm not going to eat that, I'm going to eat this, I'm going to eat that. The Gemara has all kinds of formulations of what a person can say to make something usher to them. So I say, I never want to have hana from this shul again. What does it mean? It means you're never allowed to use the services of the shul. What if I say, I never want to have hana from a certain spring, from a certain mikveh that everybody used to use? Everybody used to use that mikveh to go and be matar themselves. And you say, for whatever reason, you get a bug in your head, you're getting a fight with the mikveh, I don't want to use that mikveh ever again. I don't want to ever have hana from that mikveh. Problem is, now I need to bring a carbon into the Beis HaMikdash. I need to make myself tar somehow. So how am I going to do that? I already took a nether upon myself. I'm not going to use the community mikveh. And now I'm stuck. So what do? So I can go to another community. But what if you don't have that? So the Gemara says, it makes a difference. The difference would be, at what time of year are we talking about? If it's Bimos HaChama, if it's in the hot season of the year when everybody enjoys a nice dip in the mikveh, a nice swimming pool, so then we assume you're not allowed to go ahead and use that mikveh because you took a nether upon yourself that you're not going to get benefit, you're not going to derive pleasure from the mikveh in the local town. However, if it's during the Yemos HaGeshamim, if it's during the rainy season, if it's during the wet season, if it's during the cold season, when a person doesn't really enjoy jumping into a swimming pool, then we revert back to the principle of mitzvos lav lehenes nitnu. And what would seem to be an indication from this Gemara is that yes, although we know that it's true that mitzvos lav lehenes nitnu, that only applies when we're talking about shofar, when we're talking about a lulav, when we're talking about something that's just spiritual in its nature, you're doing a mitzvah, you're doing the act. But when you're talking about a mitzvah that also entails some physical pleasure, not like shofar, not like lulav, but like going to the mikvah, which during the hot season of the year, that is a pleasurable act, even though you're doing a mitzvah, but you're getting physical, personal pleasure from that act as well. In a case like that, we would assume that a person would not be allowed to use that mikvah because mitzvahs lav lehenes nidnu does not apply to a case where you're getting physical, personal pleasure at the same time as you're doing the mitzvah. So the Ran writes this very explicitly in Nedarim Daf Tezvav. The Ran writes as follows. Im tomar, v'chi amar hanaz tashmishech amai mitzer. Let's say you have a couple, some kind of strange couple. They say to each other, I'm never going to derive pleasure from you. Husband says to his wife, I will never derive any pleasure from you. So that means, obviously, she's not allowed to make the bed for him. It means that she's not allowed to cook dinner for him. It means if she makes any money at her profession, she's not allowed to give him the money. So they're living two totally separate lives in the same house. Strange kind of couple. However, the Gemara then goes on to say, what happens about Ona? What happens about the responsibility that the husband has to his wife that they're going to have tashmish with one another? So what do you do about that? He took a promise to himself that he's not going to have pleasure from her. So that is a pleasurable act, but at the same time, it's a mitzvah. So what's he supposed to do? So the Ran says as follows, Vim tomar, v'chi amar hanaz tashmishech amai mitzvah, when a person takes a nether upon himself. I hate my wife so much, I don't want to have any pleasure from her at all. Why do we say that he's not allowed to have tashmish with his wife? V'ha mitzvah lav lehenes nidnu. He's such a tzaddik. What do you mean? He's doing that only to do the mitzvah. He's not doing it to derive his own pleasure. Why don't you say mitzvah lav lehenes nidnu? Answers the Ran, yesh lomar, obviously. D'chi amrinan mitzvah lav lehenes nidnu. When do we say mitzvah lav lehenes nidnu? When can we use that principle? That is only hani mili lomar she'en kiyum ha-mitzvah chashiv hana. That is only when you're doing an act like shaking lulav, like blowing a shofar, then you say that's not really hana. Ava mikal makom. Let's say you have somebody while they blow shofar. Oh, they love it. Everybody's looking at them and everybody's commenting. Oh, look how well they blow the shofar. Let's say you get a lot of hana out of blowing the shofar, not because of the mitzvah per se, but because you enjoy the act physically. You enjoy it because it gives you a lot of pleasure or it clears out your system, whatever it is. In a case like that, the Ran says, we don't say the principle of mitzvahs lav lehenes nidnu would apply. And therefore he writes that this is why our Gemara says here that a person who takes a nether that they're not going to enjoy the local mikvah is not allowed to use it during the Yemos Hachama, during the hot season of the year. And this is also why the Gemara says in the Nedarim that if a person makes a nether that he's not going to have any benefit, any pleasure from his wife, he is not allowed to have Tashmish Hamita with his wife either. So the Rambam reiterates that principle of the Ran as well. He doesn't quote it from the Ran, but he says the same idea, where the Rambam writes in Hilchas Shofar that if a person is mudar hana from a shofar, let's say I say, for whatever reason, a bug in my head, I say to myself, I'm not getting any hana from the shofar in town. So the Rambam writes, mutar l'skol b'tkiya shel mitzvah. I'm allowed to go ahead and use it for my mitzvah. Why? Because mitzvah is lav lehenes nidnu. And yet in Hilchas Nedarim, the Rambam writes, if a person says, hana is tashmich alai, I don't want to have tashmish hamita with you because I don't want to have any pleasure from you. In a case like that, he's not allowed to. So the Shaul Melech asks, it's a steer in the Rambam. How come by tkiya shofar he's allowed to use the shofar, whereas by the enjoyment of being with his wife he's not allowed to do that? What's the difference? So the answer is very simple, the Shaul Melech writes. Because one case we're talking about just the spiritual pleasure of a mitzvah, and there we say the principle of mitzvah lav lehenes nidnu. In the other case we're talking about a situation where he's going to have physical and personal pleasure as well, and there we would say that mitzvah lav lehenes nidnu cannot be used. However, as much as this is the understanding, and I think it would make a lot of sense. Now, I would imagine that people would agree with the Ran and the Rambam. The Rashba seems to disagree, which is a very surprising Rashba. The Rashba disagrees because he asks, there in the Sugya Nedarim, he asks the following kasha. Listen to what he says. Miu akati kashali. The Rashba says, I'm very stuck with the following question. Now, this question is one that we're familiar with because we just heard the Ran ask the same question. But the Rashba thinks that he just discovered America. So he says, or Spain, wherever he was, Miu akati tikshili, ba'omer hanaz tashmishech alai. How come if somebody makes a nether that he's not going to have any pleasure, any benefit from his wife, ha-mitzuva hu b'mitzvah sona, u-mitzvah lav lehenes nidnu? So the Rashba says, I don't understand. I have a great question. What's that in the Gemara? How come a person who takes a nether that he's not going to derive any benefit from his wife is not allowed to have tashmish with her? Or what do you mean? You have a mitzvah midaraisa of ona. Mitzvah is lav lehenes nidnu. So how do you get off the ground? Why should that be an issue? Why should it be a problem? I'm performing my mitzvah. That's not a violation of my nether not to get hana. So what's the problem? Why is this different, asked the Rashba, than a person who makes a nether, he's not going to have benefit from the shofar in the local community, and he's allowed to go ahead and use that shofar because mitzvah slav lehenesnud. And what's the difference? That's the same kasha that the Ran has, the same kasha the Shaar HaMelech has on the Rambam. So what should he have answered? I'm getting physical pleasure, so the cases are not comparable at all. That's not what he says. The Rashba answers, he has to stand on his head to say a whole shtickel Torah to explain why it's not a problem. He could have given the simple answer. Simple answer is, over here you're getting personal pleasure, and that's something that is not allowed. Over there you're not getting personal pleasure, so that's something we say, mitzvah lav lehenesnud. Says the Rashba, no. Because the nature of the mitzvah of Onah is that I have an obligation to my wife to fulfill her pleasures as much as she wants. So the Torah dictates, it's a very important thought to think about. We think the mitzvah of Onah is, the Torah says, this and this many times a year, a person has to make sure to give his wife time. My grandfather said, just once we're on the topic, my grandfather grew up in Romania, and he said when he was in Cheder, so the Malamed used to teach them Chumash, so when you get up to the mitzvah of She'er Ksus V'Onah, means that a husband has a obligation to his wife of She'er Ksus and Onah. He has to take care of all of her needs, including all of her physical needs. He has to make sure that he provides her with clothing and with all the money that she needs to sustain herself. And Onah means he has to make sure that he makes time for Tashmish Hamita with her as well. So how are you going to explain this to young children in the Cheder in Romania? What are you going to say? The visits are Cheder. So my grandfather said that the Malamed said the translation of the word Onah is Tzait. And he said as he got older he realized that the Malamed just didn't want to explain to them what it was because they were young children. But then when he got really older, he said he understood that the Malamed was really right. That is what the word Onah means. A person has an obligation to make time for his spouse. It doesn't mean he has an obligation of Tashmish. Tashmish is one of the expressions of how a woman will feel pleasured by her husband spending time with her. But the real definition of Onah means that a husband has to make sure to make tzait, to make time for his wife. My grandfather said when he got older, he realized that the Malamed was right. That's really the definition of Onah. So over here, the Rashba goes on the same understanding. The Rashba says, the mitzvah of Onah is, we have to make sure that we provide the woman with whatever she's entitled to from her husband. If a husband makes a nether that he's not going to get hanah from his wife, now the obligation of Onah no longer exists. So now you can't say that mitzvah lav lehenesnud is going to allow me to go ahead and be with my wife, because the Torah, by making the nether, the Torah already absolved you of that obligation. And if you're going to go ahead now and do it, so then we assume you're in violation of your own nether. That's the Rashba's chiddush, a tremendous chiddush that the Rashba comes up with. Again, standing on his head to come up with a chiddush here. It's not at all the simple understanding, but that's what the Rashba writes.
I mean, I know it's an ongoing appeal.
Right.
Why is that an exception to say if you can't make it tonight against the Lord of
Hagen? Right, so you can say, why isn't it Masnal Mashakasa Batara? How can you make a nether like that? So, again, it depends what kind of nature of a nether you're going to make. So that's a whole story in the Dharma itself. But assuming that you could make such a nether, so the Rashba says, I don't understand why is it a violation of my nether to go ahead and be with my wife? Mitzvah Slav Lehenesnud, to which the Rashba does not answer the simple answer of, here you're getting personal pleasure and there you're not. The Rashba has to come up with a whole new chiddush of explaining what the nature of the mitzvah of Onah actually is. And basically what you see from the Rashba is that he does not agree with the assumption of the other Rishonim that mitzvah slav lehenesnidnu only applies where you're not having personal pleasure. The Rashba would assume that it works even where you are having, which would make the Rashba have to explain what's the pshat in our Gemara. How come our Gemara says if a person goes ahead and makes a nether that they are not going to derive benefit from the local mikvah? So the Gemara says, well, during the summertime you're not allowed to use the mikvah, and during the winter you are allowed to. Why not? How come in the summer I can't use the mikvah? Why don't you say mitzvah slav lehenesnidnu? And don't tell me that because you're deriving personal pleasure, therefore you're not allowed to use it, because the Rashba says, even in a case like that, we would say that mitzvah lav lehenesnidnu applies as well. So that's a sticky point that the Rashba is going to have to work hard to explain as well. But basically, this is a very fundamental, a very important machlokas harishonim when we talk about the whole discussion of mitzvah lav lehenesnidnu in general. Does this principle only apply to mitzvahs d'araisa, or do we assume that it applies to mitzvahs d'rabbanan as well? So what would you have said? What would you say? I would have said it shouldn't make any difference. Why? Because mitzvahs d'rabbanan are not personal pleasure. It's something that, not that the Torah puts on me, but it's something that the Rabbanim put on me, the same way that the Torah did. So it's something that my personal pleasure that comes out of it is probably insignificant, is probably not really recognized, and I should have said that even by mitzvahs derabanan, we assume the same principle would apply of mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu. The Baal HaMor, surprisingly, in our sugya, says not so. The Baal HaMor in our sugya writes, Hamuder hanah mechavero, somebody who takes hanah from his friend, and he says, he takes a nether that he's not going to get hanah from his friend. So the Baal HaMor in our sugya writes, Mutter litzkala b'shofar shal mitzvah. Even though I said I'm never going to derive benefit from you, which means I'm not allowed to eat in your house, I'm not allowed to use anything that you own, however, I'm allowed to go ahead and use the shofar that belongs to you. Why? Mitzvah slav lehenes nidnu. However, says the Baal HaMor, that is only for the mitzvah on Rosh Hashanah, Hashem mitzvah so min ha-Torah. That is only for the mitzvah on Rosh Hashanah, where the mitzvah is a biblical mitzvah, a biblical obligation. However, he says, what about on a tanis, on a public fast day, where we have a rabbinic obligation to go ahead and blow a shofar as well? Again, that's not the Torah's mitzvah, that's a rabbinic mitzvah. There, says the Baal HaMor, you have no right to go ahead and use the shofar of the person that you were took a neder not to get hanah from. Why not? So the Baal HaMor writes, because this is a mitzvah d'araisa, and that's a mitzvah d'rabbanon. So what? So the Baal HaMor says, nope. Again, that's exactly what he says, because it overrides. Why is it override? You took a neder, you're not going to get hanah. The Chachamim cannot come along later and say that you should go ahead and do it. So the only time we say mitzvah lav lehenes nitnu works is when you're talking about a case where we have a mitzvah d'araisa, like using the mikvah. Again, using the mikvah might not be a good example.
You can get rid of every derabanan that way.
What?
You can get rid of every derabanan that way.
Why? Again, you take a neder. No, I didn't take a neder here that I'm not going to do the mitzvah.
But you can create a situation where
where it won't be available to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
The chiyuv just falls apart.
It's not going to say that you're not going to be punished for that. But you're not allowed to do it. So you're going to be punished twofold. Uh-huh. Number one, because you didn't do the mitzvah. Number two, because you put yourself in a situation where you can't perform the mitzvah. Again, if there's only one shofar in the community, and you took a neder that you're never going to get benefit from that person, so what's going to be on the next tannis, on the next public fast day when we have to blow the shofar? You're going to have to sit outside of shul. So you're going to be punished. It's not, you didn't do the right thing. You got yourself out of a mitzvah, but you did the wrong thing.
Mitzvah is lav lehenes
nitnu, where does it come from?
I think it's
an assumption midaraisa. I think so. And that's why, what? I think so.
The principle is there is no anah in a mitzvah. I don't understand the
Ah, so you're saying, meaning, before we read the Baal HaMor, I would have said, right, that it should be the same. What's the difference? I don't get any benefit when I'm blowing the shofar on a public fast day. Right? That's what I would have said. So it should be equally applied both to a mitzvah d'araisa as well as to a mitzvah d'rabban. Again, that's why I started off by saying that I think this is a very surprising Baal HaMor, but it's an important Baal HaMor to know. Not only that, the Shar HaMelech points out that number one, why does the Baal HaMor choose to contrast shofar of Rosh Hashanah to a shofar of a tanis, of a public fast day? He says, this is derais and that's derabanan. Mimerchak tavi lachma. Why doesn't the Baal HaMor just say, first day Rosh Hashanah and second day Rosh Hashanah? First day Rosh Hashanah is a mitzvah derais, second day Rosh Hashanah is a mitzvah derabanan. So the Baal HaMor should just say simply, first day Rosh Hashanah, you're allowed to use the shofar that was asur b'hanah, that's a mitzvah derais. Second day Rosh Hashanah, you're not allowed to because second day Rosh Hashanah is only the Rabbanon. So the Shar HaMelech says, no, call the Tikkun Rabbanon, came the Reis HaTikkun. So when they made a din that you have to blow shofar the second day, it's the same as the first. What are you talking about? How can you say that? How can you say the second day is like the first? And when the Rabbanon made a din that on a public fast that you have to blow shofar, it's also came the Reis HaTikkun. So it should also take on the rules of a Rosh Hashanah blowing shofar. Again, it's a very difficult Baal HaMor to explain. And the Shar HaMelech goes further and he says, it's actually a steer in the Baal HaMor himself. He contradicts himself. Why? Because the Baal HaMor writes the following. In Maseches Sukkah, I know we're jumping a little bit back and forth, but all these cases give us more of an understanding into the sugya. So the Baal HaMor writes in Maseches Sukkah, what if a person takes a neder that That what if a person takes a neder that they're not going to use a certain lulav, whatever it is. Now the mitzvah comes along and you have to do your mitzvah. So we say mitzvah lav lehenes nitnu. And you're allowed to use that kind of lulav even though it's also brought not to you. So the Ran over there the Malamar over there writes that you're allowed to use it not only on the first day of Sukkot, but even on the rest of the days of Sukkot. How can you use it on the rest of the days of Sukkot? The rest of the days of Sukkot are on your Rabbanan. And don't tell me the Balamar is talking about where you're standing in the Beis HaMikdash when you have a Chiyuv every day there. It's improbable that that's what he's talking about. So this is a major problem that the Shaar HaMelech points out when we talk about the opinion of the Balamar. First of all, the Balamar is surprising in the first place that he assumes that this halacha of mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu only applies to dinim d'oraisa, not dinim d'rabbanan. But even if you accept that premise, number one, why does the Balamar contrast shofar on Rosh Hashanah to shofar on a public fast day instead of contrasting first day Rosh Hashanah to second day? And second of all, how does that opinion of the Balamar fit with what the Balamar himself writes with regard to Sukkis, that if a person has a lulav, they're allowed to use the lulav of Isuri Hana not only on the first day, but even on the subsequent days?
How can you even use it on the first day? Isn't it considered lulav hagadol at that point? I mean, if you take a netter against this particular lulav, then you're stealing.
No, it's not a lulav hagadol. The lulav is up for grabs. You just decided that you're not going
to
use it.
Which means lesser to you. It's not yours. You can never be
okay. It's what?
It's yours, but you
can't use it. Something like that. So anyway, this is a major problem in the opinion of the Balamar, how exactly we are supposed to understand what the Balamar really means here. There is a further discussion also that relates to this Balamar. There's a Gemara in Erev in Daf Lamed Aleph where the Gemara talks about also a strange kind of case. We have an Erev Eitumen. So what happens is on Shabbos a person wants to go a certain distance, but if they want to go a further distance on Shabbos, they have to make an Erev Eitumen. So the Gemara tells us, what if you decide to put the Erev Eitumen on top of a grave, on top of a kever? Why do you do that? I don't know. That's where you measure. That's where the end of the tchum is. So you want to extend it, so you put it on top of a grave. A grave is Aser B'Hana. And now you're making, basically, an Erev Eitumen means you have just made that as your public residence for Shabbos. So basically, you took a place which is Aser B'Hana. You now put a piece of challah on top of it, whatever it might be, to make your Erev Eitumen. And now you want that to be considered your residence for Shabbos. So you're getting Hana out of an Isuri Hana. Says the Gemara, you're allowed to do that as long as it's Litzarech Mitzvah. However, if you're doing it just L'dvar HaRashus, that would not be allowed to be done because Mitzvah Lav Lehenes Nitnu only covers a mitzvah and not something. So take, for example, a person on Shabbos wants to extend the Tchum because there's a public shir going on further out in the other town. So he's allowed to make that because, even though you're putting it on a grave, because Mitzvah Lav Lehenes Nitnu. However, if a person wants to do it just because he has a friend that lives another 2,000 amos out of the city and you want to extend your Tchum on Shabbos, in a case like that, we would assume that what? If you're putting it on a place which is Aser B'Hana, or you're using something which is Aser B'Hana, for that purpose, you're not allowed to do that. So what are the cases that the Gemara gives there of Litzarech Mitzvah? So the cases that the Gemara draws up are, not what I said, not Talmud Torah, not something like that. The case that the Gemara gives is L'Leches L'Beis HaAvel, or L'Tanchume Avelim, or L'Beis HaMishteh. So it says that you want to be Menachem Avel someone. Nobody said Shiva on Shabbos. It means you want to go and comfort somebody who just lost a relative, not to be Menachem Avel. Or you want to go ahead and participate in a Beis HaMishteh. So what is the nature of my obligation to go be Menachem Avel or go to be Mevakar Chola?
None of those are Midoraisa.
None of those are Midoraisa. Is that so clear?
First day.
Not so clear. Big discussion in the Rambam whether or not this is part of a bigger mitzvah d'oraisa or not. The Rambam writes, maybe it's part of after the Rechakocha. The Rambam writes in Perek Yudalad and Hilchos Avel, Hachnasas Kala, Nicham Avelim are mitzvahs d'rabanan, the Rambam says. The Rambam says are mitzvahs d'rabanan. Well, if that's correct, that these are only mitzvahs d'rabanan, then according to the Balamar, how does the Gemara use that as an example? When do we say that you're allowed to make an Erev of Tchumen in a place which is Aser B'Hana? Because mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu, the example that's given is a person who wants to participate in being Menachem Avel, or being Mevakar Chola, or being part of the Beis HaMishteh, part of a Shever Brachos. What do you mean? Those are only mitzvahs d'Rabbanan. The Balamar assumes that when it comes to a mitzvah d'Rabbanan, you are not able to use the principle of mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu. So this is a problem. Rabbeinu Yonah writes just on that point about whether or not we assume all these kinds of mitzvos Shabbein Adam Lachaveiro are considered d'araisa or d'rabbanan, Rabbeinu Yonah writes, well, this would make a major difference. We know that the halacha is ha'osik b'mitzvah pater min ha'mitzvah. While I'm doing one mitzvah, I'm not obligated to do another mitzvah. However, what would be the rule if I'm osik b'mitzvah d'rabbanan, and now a mitzvah d'araisa comes along? Do I have to go ahead and stop what I'm doing to perform the mitzvah d'araisa? The answer is yes. Why? Because the mitzvah d'araisa takes precedence, even though you're in the middle of a mitzvah d'rabbanan, but a mitzvah d'rabbanan doesn't count when you have a mitzvah d'araisa in front of you. So Rabbeinu Yonah writes, what if a person is involved in Gemilas Chasadim? I'm sorry, what if a person is involved in Nicham Avelim, and now it's time for him to say Kriyashma? And if you're going to stay at the Shiva house, you're going to miss this Kriyashma. Do you have to excuse yourself and say, I'm sorry, I have to say Kriyashma, I'll come back a little later, but right now I have a mitzvah d'araisa? Or do you say, no, osik b'mitzvah, you're involved in the mitzvah of being Menachem Avel, and therefore you're pater min ha-mitzvah. You're pater from saying Kriyashma. What would he say? Rabbeinu Yonah writes in Maseches Brachos that no, since the mitzvah of Nicham Avelim is a mitzvah d'araisa, it's part of the general category of Gemilas Chasad and part of Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, whatever you're going to say. Therefore, Rabbeinu Yonah argues, if you're involved in being Menachem Avel by somebody, finish off the Shiva call, and then you go and you say Kriyashma. If you're not able to do so, osik b'mitzvah pater min ha-mitzvah. Too bad. You don't have to do that, because we assume osik mitzvah pater min ha-mitzvah. Again, this is part of a general discussion as to whether or not all these kinds of mitzvahs are considered to be d'araisa or d'rabbanan, which would make an afkamina for osik b'mitzvah, but it would also make an afkamina for here, for this balamort. Do we have a right to say mitzvahs lablihanus nitnu applies even to those cases, or do you assume that maybe it should not? Let's just close, we're running out of time, but let's just close with one last point, and that is when it comes to one area of Torah, when it comes to one mitzvah, we assume that all these rules of mitzvahs lablihanus nitnu do not apply, and that is by the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. The Gemara says in Brachas on Daf Samach Gimel, commenting on the pasuk Haske Sushma Yisrael Hayom Azen Yeselam, the Gemara says, what do you mean Hayom Azen Yeselam? Today you became a nation. Wasn't the time that they became a nation 40 years earlier on the occasion of Yitzias Mitzrayim, Kabbalah Sator? So why do we say Hayom Azen Yeselam? So the Gemara says, Ela Lamedcha, it's supposed to teach you Shechaviva Torah Alom Deha Bechol Yom V'Yom Ki Yom Shenitna Behar Sinai. Every single day we're supposed to have the feeling as if the Torah was given on this very day. There's an excitement that comes around with the learning of the Torah itself. Rabbeinu Yonah writes very famously in his commentary on Pirkei Avos that when a person kishata miyageya es atzmecha b'Torah, when a person toils, when a person learns the Torah and studies it, tishta she'aba, says Rabbeinu Yonah, you should have total pleasure and enjoyment from the study, from the learning of Torah that you are involved in. And Rabbeinu Yonah then goes on to say that this is what the Ribbono Shel Olam does as well. V'yesh l'cha l'asos kein. The same way that God is mishtasheya b'Torah. So it doesn't mean he plays as a game. Remember, there was once someone in YU who they had some sort of... Everybody had to write a Hebrew essay in halacha to try to apply for some honors program that they were having in yeshiva. You got paid money for something, I don't know. So my father was one of the judges. So it didn't have anyone's names on there because they didn't want the Rabbeim to be biased. Oh, he's my star student, so he should get in. So they had everybody had a number. So my father didn't even know who it was. So he showed me this thing and he said, I don't know who this guy is, but he's disqualified before we even start. I said, why? So he said, because he thinks the Torah is a joke. He thinks the Torah is a game. So what do you mean? So he says that the person wrote this whole article, and he wrote, maybe you can say like this, maybe you can say like that, maybe whatever. Oh, he's writing a whole thing. And in the end, he wrote, the ending, parting words of his essay were, V'hamischak nigmar. And the game is over. You know, he brought a proof from a Gemara, and he said, and now the game is over. You could have said like this, could have said like that. Now that I brought a proof from the Gemara, the game is over. My father said, the guy considers the Torah to be a game. He thinks this is a joke. You bring a raya here, a raya there. Now you say the game is over. The guy cannot be taken into the honors program. So he disqualified him. He went to the Rebbe of that Talmud later on, and he said, you know, because the Rebbe was upset, why do you not accept this student? So he said, what do you mean? The guy thinks everything's a joke. So he said, what do you mean? But he's the best guy in the shir. So my father said, but he's lacking Yerushamayim. You see that he doesn't care about the learning that he's doing. He doesn't really understand that this is a serious enterprise. As much as we're supposed to enjoy it and have pleasure in the learning that we do, it doesn't mean that we treat it as a joke. It doesn't mean that it's considered like a game. This is something that we have to take very, very seriously. There's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch. We know that women are obligated to say the Birchas HaTorah in the morning as well. That's what the Shulchan Aruch paskins in Siman Mem Vav. So the Magen Avram and the Bir Agra are bothered Don't we know that a woman doesn't have an obligation in Talmud Torah? So why is it that she makes a Birchas HaTorah? So some say the reason why is because, well, she still has an obligation to learn the parts of Torah that are relevant to her, so she has to make a Birchas HaTorah. So I don't know. Every day a woman's learning Hafrashas Challah and Hilchas Nida, and I don't think so. Most women probably during the day are not busy with that. And most women are also not coming to our shir. So if you're coming to the shir, you have to make a Birchas HaTorah. But otherwise, why are you making Birchas HaTorah? So the Magen Avraham is bothered with this, and the Bir Agro is bothered. But Rabbi Yosef Engel writes, simply, the reason why is because it's like a Birchas HaNenin. A Birchas HaTorah is like a Birchas HaNenin. And the same way that Asur Lahenis Min Olam Azer B'la Bracha, just like you're not allowed to take a food item and put it in your mouth without making a bracha, so too a Birchas HaTorah. If a woman's going to say one word of Torah during the day, it's like she's stealing. It's like she's not reciting a Birchas HaNenin before eating the food. And therefore a woman is just as obligated as a man, not because she has the mitzvah, the chiyuv, of the obligation of Talmud Torah, but because if she's going to learn a word of Torah during the day, she has that obligation to make a bracha because it's like a Birchas HaNenin, and that's what Rabbi Yosef Engel writes, because Torah is supposed to be a very enjoyable part of our lives. And this is what the Avnei Nezer writes about in such a beautiful way in his Akdama to the Eglei Tal. He writes, Hine shamati k'tzas b'nei adam toam miderach haseichel. There are people, says the Avnei Nezer, who are toam miderach haseichel, whose whole perspective is completely off b'inyan limud haTorah. What does it mean to learn Torah l'shma? The Omrim, they think it means ki halomed shasu poskim u'mechadesh chidushim u'sameach u'misanik b'limudo. They think that a person who learns all of Shas, who's a big Talmud Chacham, and is sameach u'me'anik b'limudo, has enjoyment and happiness and feelings of accomplishment in the learning that they're doing, ein zeh limud Torah l'shma kol kach. There are people who think that that takes away from the level of l'shma in your learning. Kemoshim hayalomed b'pashtus, she'ein lo mehalimud shum tanug. That's not the same as somebody who sits there and hates what they're doing and doesn't enjoy the learning. That's the real Torah l'shma. It's not Torah l'shma if you enjoy what you're doing. Says the Avnei Nezer, uve'emes shezehu toz gomer. Avnei Nezer writes, this is an absolute mistake. Ve'adarabba, zehu ikr mitzvahs limud haTorah. This is what limud haTorah is all about. Liosas v'sameach u'misanik b'limudo. That is what limud haTorah is all about. This is what it's for. That we're supposed to enjoy everything that we're involved in. We're supposed to have a good time as we're learning. Sha'az divrei Torah nivla'im b'damo. That's the way to have divrei Torah become a part of your essence. V'nase davuk b'Torah hakdosha, and you will become connected with the Torah itself. And let's just close. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Reish Chaf Aleph, that's Hilchos Nedarim in Yerodeya. The Shulchan Aruch there talks about somebody who takes a neder not to have hanah from his friend. What is he allowed to use? What is he not? So the Gemara says if someone takes a neder not to have hanah from his friend, this is what we've been discussing, you're allowed to use your friend's lulav and esrog because mitzvahs lav lehanas nitnu. However, the Shulchan Aruch there writes that you are not allowed to use the svarim of your friend. If you take a neder hanah from your friend, that you're not going to get any pleasure, you're allowed to use his lulav, but you're not allowed to use his Gemara. Why you're not allowed to use his Gemara? Isn't the Gemara the same as the lulav? Says the Taz. No, it's not the same. Because you're not going to get pleasure out of the lulav. That's just a mitzvah. Mitzvah's lav lehanas nidu. And you better get pleasure out of the Gemara because that's what the Gemara is there for. Talmud Torah is not made to be studied without pleasure, without enjoyment. That's what Talmud Torah is. Ikr limudo. That's what the crux of Talmud Torah is all about, that we should be sus v'sameach u'misanik b'limudo. And therefore, that's why the Taz explains that the Shulchan Aruch says, when a person takes a nether hanah from his friend, we only say mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu with regard to the friend's mitzvah items, but not with regard to the friend's svarim, because when we learn from a sefer, we're supposed to have absolute pleasure. When we have the opportunity to learn Torah seriously, we should also take that opportunity to have pleasure in the learning that we are doing. So, Mitzvah Shem, we will continue.